So how do we heal from this separation from the body? The good news is that the wisest elements of all religious and spiritual traditions seem to teach about a deep awareness of and integration with our bodies. Even Buddhism, which so many people think is just about changing our minds, is also about the body. The Buddha taught that noticing the body with deep awareness could lead to enlightenment. Likewise, the Christian teachers I respect teach about embodiment, incarnation, that God is not above and beyond this world, but here in the moss and the mud, here in the working of our hands and in the pains that need relief. The Christian teacher Daniel Berrigan says, it all comes down to this. Whose flesh are you touching and why? Whose flesh are you recoiling from and why? Whose flesh are you burning and why? And as Jane shared in our chalice lighting, the Dalai Lama says the purpose of life is not to transcend the body, but to embody the transcendent. Embodying the transcendent is the goal at the root of ritual, which is found in so many of the world's religions, from earth-centered religions to Hinduism to Islam to Christianity. Ritual is not just superstition. Rituals help us embody the values and beliefs that too often remain static and isolated in our minds. Rituals remind us that our values are not expressed just in what we think in our head or feel in our hearts. Our values are expressed in what we do with our hands, where we go with our bodies, how we touch one another or don't touch one another, how we care for our and others' bodies, how we respond to the things we feel, see, taste, touch, how we act. And so what a joy it is that in this church, yes, we do a lot of sitting still and listening, but we also stand and sing. Occasionally, maybe, we move our bodies with the music. Occasionally. We don't get too upset when the sounds and movement of children in the service disrupts the serenity. We sometimes even get up out of our seats and move about, doing rituals and activities that I imagine some have to work harder than others at getting past their judgment about. We drop stones in water to embody our joys and sorrows. We reach out and hold hands at the end of the service. At least once a month, we have what we call an intergenerational service where I invite you to do crazy things like come pile your shoes up here for a shoe blessing, eat bread that some of the members have baked, pour water in a common basin at our water communion, receive a flower from a child at our flower ceremony, or throw yarn across a room to weave a web. All of these can help us move what's in our heads into our bodies and thus into our living. Stanley Hauerwas says this about his tradition of Christianity, and I'd say it about any religion or spirituality worth its salt, that it is not a set of beliefs or doctrines one believes, but rather it is to have one's body shaped, one's habits determined, in such a way that the worship of God is unavoidable. If needed, you can replace the word God with whatever you hold sacred. And so it could become, it is to have one's body shaped, one's habits determined, in such a way that the living out of our values is unavoidable. So see, the body has much wisdom, because the body does not lie. The Irish poet John O'Donohue says, your mind can deceive you and put all kinds of barriers between you and your nature, but your body does not lie. Your body tells you, if you attend to it, how your life is and if you are living from your soul or from the labyrinths of your negativity. Your body is, in essence, a crowd of different members who work in harmony to make your belonging in the world possible. The soul is not simply within the body, hidden somewhere in its recesses. The truth is the converse. Your body is in the soul, and the soul suffuses you completely. So let's look deeper at just one of his statements. Your body makes your belonging in the world possible. In his book, Coming to Our Senses, the historian Morris Berman says that our first experience of life as infants is not merely a visual or audio experience. It is primarily felt in the body. We know ourselves and the security of those who hold us, skin to skin. This early knowing is not so much heard, seen, or thought, it's felt. So here I quote at length from the Catholic teacher Richard Rohr. Psychologists say that when we first begin to doubt and move outside of that kinesthetic knowing, that bodily knowing, we hold on to things like teddy bears and dolls. My little sister Alana had the classic security blanket as a baby. She dragged it everywhere until it was dirty and ragged. But we could not take it away from her. Children do such things to reassure themselves that they are still connected and one. But we all begin to doubt this primal union as the subject-object split of a divided world slowly takes over, usually by age 7. Body, mind, world, self are all start getting split apart. We begin to see the basic fault lines in the world, and the rest of life will be spent trying to put it all back together again. We need spirituality to help heal the brokenness of our identity in our world. True spirituality, he says, is always bringing us back to the original bodily knowing that is unitive experience, which is why you cannot do it all in the head. So like O'Donohue, who said that our body makes our belonging in the world possible, Rohr says that bodily knowing brings us to unitive experience. As more and more people study consciousness, they find consciousness is part of and rooted in the body. And so some say that through bodily awareness, we can glimpse a universal consciousness, that we don't end at our skin. For those who feel that universal consciousness seems too kind of woo-woo, you could consider the ways in which our bodies do objectively connect us with the rest of the world. The writer Andrea Jones describes it poetically. She says, "It is convenient to think of the human birthday suit as a membrane that separates, preserving the boundary between self and not self. But from the moment your parental gametes linked their half strands of DNA to form the zygote that would develop into you, everything you now claim as yourself has been derived from matter and information imported across your body's external membrane. The world may be full of things that slash, nibble, pierce, abrade, infect, and sear, but it is also replete with oxygen, sunlight, chocolate, laughter, the colors of leaves in autumn, the smell of fresh baked bread, the twining of bodies under the covers on a winter's night. Skin differentiates, but does not isolate. Your singular existence unfolds within it, but skin does not hold the universe at bay. Instead, it marks the seam that joins your existence to everything else." So I'll close with this. What's the key to living more embodied lives? Embodiment experts, and yes, those exist, embodiment experts, attest that it's about two things: awareness and choice. So we bring awareness, non-judgmental, curious, loving awareness to this bodily experience of living. And based on that awareness, we make choices, wise, loving, just choices about how to use our bodies, care for our bodies, care for others' bodies, how to act. Like I've said, rituals and spiritual practices can help us cultivate this awareness and make choices into habits. You don't have to start meditating every day or doing mindful yoga every day. You could, but you could also vow to eat at least 1 minute of your lunch mindfully. You could bring your attention to your breath at each red light. You could promise to hug your spouse for longer than 2 seconds, even if you're in a hurry every time you leave the house. The good news is that the body, source of wisdom, place of deep practice, crucible of interconnection, is always with us. And the body, your body, no matter its state, is good.